Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. Oh, my headphone does work. The headphones work. Alert, alert. The headphones work. I put my headphones on without thinking and then realized, hey, it's working. Hello, everybody. It's the Friday edition of The Drive. You know, every day, it's another step forward. We're taking another step forward. Made it back on the air yesterday after lightning struck and a lot of the equipment was damaged and has to have been replaced. But we didn't make it back on yesterday, not able to have the phones, and the phones are still out. Can we get some headphones for Don? Okay.
Thank you.
Because we have another full house here in the studio today. Since our phones aren't working, we called on as much help as we could because there's a lot to talk about and good to have different folks to discuss things. So Bill here, Dan is back. He got back in town yesterday after a visit out west with some family. Coach Don Dunn back with us here in the studio. Don, how you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
And we didn't have a show Monday. Monday was Memorial Day. It was planned that we weren't going to have a show Monday. we didn't realize we wouldn't have shows Tuesday or Wednesday because of the lightning that struck the equipment. But Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, who's usually with us on Mondays, kind enough to join us here on this Friday edition of The Drive. B-Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's going to be a very busy 2 weeks here for Auburn football program. They've got 12 official visitors coming in today. They have their first camp starting Sunday. And then it's going to be a straight 2 weeks, midweek visitors, weekend visitors, camps for about 7 or 8 days straight. So it's going to be a busy, busy time.
Oh, it is. I mean, and I know you and Don were talking before the show. It's not the way it used to be at this time of year.
No, not at all, Bill. And we were talking a minute ago. Now, after the end of May, we would be gone the whole month of May, what we called spring recruiting. Then we would come back and do the camps, the little kids' camp, the high school camps, the prospect camps. And then about June 17th, 18th, our camps would be over. And it was kind of a vacation time through usually around the 7th or 10th of July after the 4th.
Right.
Then we were back, but it still wasn't every weekend. It wasn't every night. And I admire these guys. Of course, they are getting paid well. But that's good. That's good. They should. But it has changed so much. I don't know how. And, you know, it makes it hard on these guys, like Brian, too. I mean, nobody has any downtime. You know, you got to go over there and interview people, right? And just
did the early signing period change a lot of this as far as when you need to be recruiting and when you need to be zeroing in on next year's recruiting class?
Yeah, now
I guess that's a question for both of you.
Because yeah, probably Brian would know more than me because you know I retired in 2017, 2018, and I don't know if it had gone in. I can't remember. To be honest with you, I'm too old to remember.
It did. And once they allowed official visits to happen in May and June, that really changed the calendar a lot.
Yeah, right. You really sort of flipped the calendar.
Which, yes.
So most of the kids now are planning on enrolling early, being able to go through spring practice. They're making their visits in May and June. They're deciding during the summer and then signing. You know, they're committed before their high school season starts.
Yeah, that's the way the situation Auburn's got 11 commitments right now.
Wow.
If you go back to Don Dunn's time, they probably would have maybe two or three.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, we couldn't bring kids in now.
Right.
We couldn't be out. Yeah, that's – so these are official visits, correct?
Yes, they are.
Wow.
Fully paid for.
Yeah.
Just like with NIL, you can even pay them a little extra.
To come. Yeah.
The hope is that when July turns to August, is that safe to say when you get to the first week of August or so, Auburn would like to have double-digit commitments.
They got that already.
They're already at 10.
They'd like to be close to 20.
Closer to 20. Yeah, I would like to add double-digit commitments potentially between now and August 1st and have something close to 20 when the high school season gets started. I imagine that not all that long ago, a lot of this evaluation involved how the kids were playing their senior year.
Oh, yeah.
For Auburn, especially with some of the top rated prospects in 25, they're willing to say, before you even step on the field, your senior year, we'd like to have you signed, sealed, and delivered for next season.
When I was coaching, in the old days, we would leave practice on a Thursday, even with a home game or even away game. We would meet the team where we were going on the road. We would spend sometimes guys would leave Wednesday night, and then we would meet the team wherever on Friday night or really Saturday morning would be the first time we would see them. We'd go out all over.
You're watching high school football.
Yes,
yeah, you're watching
exactly.
High school football on Friday night.
And junior college football. And they played on Thursday nights. I had Mississippi JCs. They played Thursday nights. So I'd try to get to those towns in Mississippi where those JCs were. Woo! Yeah. Always had good chicken on a stick, though, and chicken gizzards and livers.
Oh yeah!
My friends out west didn't believe that, like these fancy restaurants in California. It's good fried chicken. I've had better fried chicken at gas stations.
Right, no kidding. Really. And now Buc-ee's is everybody's eating at Buc-ee's.
You see the world's largest Buc-ee's is about to open in Texas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What, 256 pumps?
Unbelievable.
Gas pumps. Yeah. My goodness.
Oh, man. Welcome in.
Like a military base.
Yeah. No kidding.
But no trucks. No big trucks. Wow.
It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Yes, we've got quite a bit to talk about to catch up. We caught up a little yesterday. We'll talk with Brian about the additions to the Auburn basketball roster since the last time we've talked to him about that. We'll get into some of the details about football recruiting. We can talk some more about, the SEC spring meetings have wrapped up. Not big news this year. It didn't really seem like. I mean, we found, I'm trying to think of really what was the big news. There wasn't really any big news.
Yeah,
usually it seems like there's something. This year, everybody's just waiting to see what happens from the settlement of the lawsuits.
Right. Well, Sankey had the curious remark the first day about, he's never met a student athlete who wanted to be taxed like an employee.
Yeah,
ever met anybody that wanted to be taxed?
Yeah. Well, do they want to be taxed like independent contractors? Like, is that what he's suggesting?
You'd rather be taxed as an employee. I can tell you that.
That's what I mean.
That's what I mean. Than as an independent contractor.
Is that what he's suggesting? I don't know.
Well, maybe so.
But you're right. As far as rules developments or any sort of, we mentioned yesterday that it seems like everything about the ninth game in conference play is silent right now. That feels more and more like a face-off between the SEC and ESPN. Even though yesterday we said, there's talk that some folks in the SEC are opposed to a ninth game because it would make the schedules harder. I wonder if they're being shouted down by everybody else, and it's just about. It's just about getting ESPN to cough up more money for an extra week of SEC games, or it could mean ESPN acquiring those rights. And if you noticed, ESPN sold the rights to two college football playoff games to TNT in the last couple of weeks. TNT is going to air. I think it's the two college football playoff games that are going to go head to head with NFL games this upcoming December. But ESPN now, willing to even license some of its college football product to other networks. So as far as I don't know. What is there anything you were expecting development on?
It just seemed like it was probably as newsless an SEC meeting as I could ever recall.
I mean, there was the talk about walk-ons, right, and that you had multiple coaches sort of lobbying to try to keep.
They don't want the roster size to be downsized.
Brian, what do you think of the I guess a decision is going to have to be made about
the roster
size and what is to be done there. I mean, I sort of understand if everyone on the team is due a paycheck, you wonder right. if teams would have the appetite to have extremely large rosters.
Right. You've got two forces battling each other, right? You got the coaches who want their 110, 115, 120 guys so they can have these full practices, full scout teams. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Don can talk about this more.
Is it coaches against bean counters?
Right, and then there's a cost of that, right? If you're going to have to pay everybody, you know, there's no such thing as welcome. I don't even know if this is true or not yet, really. All this has not been completely figured out yet.
It's just being speculated, but it's being strongly speculated.
And then you got the thing where you look at NFL, they've got, is it a
53
plus 16 or 17 on the
scout? Well, not scout, what do they call
the
it?
Taxi or
reserve. And assuredly, assuredly.
70. They get by with 70. However, they do pick up and drop players too, so maybe 75.
They can add players, they can trade players. And see, that's something obviously you can't do in college. Yeah.
I would guess there's going to be a D1 standard and not a conference standard, but again, that's a guess as far as, you know, roster size limits. And if it's a D1 standard, one would think that the smaller schools would absolutely want the rosters smaller to keep costs down, and you'd have the bigger schools, your Michigans and your Ohio States and your Alabamas and your Georgias, saying, no, we're happy with that number being triple digits, potentially, as far as how many people on the roster. So it's very, I mean, if you have...
Especially if football could be separated.
Right.
Because if football is not going to be separated and you're going to continue to have to deal with Title IX, Brian, then you can understand to downsize the roster.
So could a school like Auburn get by with just 85 players? Probably. Are coaches going to be very upset about that and not like it? Probably.
I think absolutely.
But if everybody else is having to do it...
Yeah,
there's also the path forward that would involve there are people who help with like student assistance and student, you know, there are ways to designate players who are, again, it's not the same thing as walk-ons, but I would point to there are men college students who will assist the women's
practice with the women
practice with the women's basketball team. They're not on the roster, but they are treated there's sort of a, I don't know, like I it's not the same thing.
That would be hard. That'd be sort of hard to do, to convince guys. Well, I mean, if they weren't getting the same benefits.
Well, how about this? If scholarship limitations are gone, could you have people like that who are on scholarship but not on the roster and not being compensated as employees, but suddenly it's like, you know what, the university is going to give them a preferred walk on, you know, a tuition break I think there'd be avenues there if you got rid of scholarship limitations. I think there'd be ways to reward walk on, you know, roster adjacent players with academic benefits without necessarily compensating them. But again, I don't know, but it would be I feel like there are people working in athletic departments to find out ways around a potential roster cap. But it's something I just thought of there, Bill. But
I had not thought of it. That's really interesting. And hey, there'll be an awful lot of things that are thought of, or if they aren't, people might try to come up
with. So the trade-off would be, all right,
as we head toward the details.
You're a walk-on. You're not on the roster anymore, but you're on scholarship. But like, but you get a designation as, you know, a preferred student assistant or whatever, and you're on scholarship. Like, that's
of course the downside to that is nobody could ever see you. I mean, you wouldn't get to dress out.
You wouldn't
be on the sideline.
You're not on the roster.
You'd never be able to get into a game. You're just out there. You're a tackling dummy.
Yeah, exactly.
and maybe there'd be a way to work your way onto the 85 in that role if you do enough.
Better than the guys on the
Exactly. You do enough. I mean, you'll have a better shot of doing it than the average student, you know, proving your way forward.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting full tuition, room and board, and a scholarship, and you go out there and you don't have to practice on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, that's a pretty good 4-day week.
I mean, you could sell that to a couple. I mean, you've been on recruiting visits. Yeah. I mean, you could sell.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean,
that's a good idea.
There's no tell. I mean, really, and that's something that
you'll be on ESPN tomorrow.
You may go to a couple. Don, you may go to a couple of administrators with that.
Not anymore. Yeah,
right. All right, we're just getting underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive. We did want to let you know, again, the phones are not working, but you should be able to text us on the Drive text box.
Yeah, want to shout out Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They sponsor the text box, 334-564-1840. Probably should have tried that out before we before we, you know, let's
Drew said it. Well, Drew said it works.
Okay, Drew. Oh, okay. So we are okay. So the text box is open. If you want to chime in again, apologies for the technical difficulties we've been suffering this week as a result of the electrical storm. Can we call it that, Bill?
Yes.
The electrical storm we had on over the weekend to knock out some of our equipment. But we're piecing it together and getting closer to 100% every day.
Yeah, we will take our first break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Don, and Brian. That sounds like a band.
Yeah.
May not be the best band,
with
but
Drew,
we do our best.
With Drew at the, in the rhythm section.
Said Drew, that's right. Drew's got the beat. I played a little keyboard.
Oh, Ringo forehand over there.
Anybody in here play?
Oh, by the way,
any of you guys ever played?
Not well, not well. Okay, well. I
would have been a pretty bad band.
I had someone try to teach me piano because I can reach multiple, different keys, and they thought if I, got good at it, but it's not.
You always think long fingers. Then I watch people like Elton John play the piano with those little stubby fingers.
It's a speed game. It's a dexterity game.
Yeah,
by the way, All-Star Band in Vegas while I was there. They were going to be either at Mirage or Caesars, but Ringo and the
he's got like a residence going.
There were a lot of
he usually has some pretty good guys with him.
So I was staying at a place near the Sphere, and the Sphere opened with U2 having a residency there, and the new residency that's moved in is John Mayer and the Dead.
Molt sent some video.
Okay,
he was out there.
A lot of folks had moved. Maybe it's not the opening weekend of it,
I think 2 weeks ago.
Okay, because there were a lot of people. I left Thursday morning. A lot of people Wednesday night, and I could tell a lot of people coming into the airport Thursday had the trademarks of Grateful Dead fans.
Tie dye.
You saw a lot of things like that.
Speaking of Bill Walton,
and I saw.
Yeah, there we go. That's a nice segue.
Last night, a really nice tribute to Bill Walton on the at the Sphere from the Grateful Dead, Dead and Company, which I thought was a nice thing for probably. Maybe not the most famous Grateful Dead fan, but certainly someone who was on the, like, if you...
He's probably among them.
Yeah, to name a celebrity Grateful Dead fan, Bill Walton would have been, one of the top answers. Sad news earlier this week, the passing of Bill Walton.
Yeah, and I was telling you, and we didn't get a chance. Don, I'm glad you brought it up yesterday. I mean, so much has happened over the last few days since we've been on the air. But, I mean, when Auburn was in Phoenix... playing for the and about to win the national title. Lo and behold, I mean, we're in line. I'm getting in line with the family. I've got a pass, but I'm going back. As a matter of fact, I've been looking for an extra ticket. We found an extra ticket for one of the boys' girlfriends or something like that. And I'm going back and getting that ticket. And I went, do you guys realize who's standing right, like, two people behind us in line? It was Bill Walton. Bill Walton was like, and you can't miss him because he's head above the crowd.
Right.
I mean, he's up there, but I mean, he was just as friendly as could be, just there because he had a chance to be there. He didn't think Auburn was going to win, but Luke, he had more ties with Oregon.
Sure. No, and he Luke was Arizona, but
yeah,
it was
he was.
Still,
but I mean, he was a Pac. Yeah. He was a Pac.
Conference
guy.
Of champion.
Pac-10,
no, he's a conference. He's a conference of champion. Yeah.
Conference of champions.
Didn't meet Bill Walton. Saw him at a UCLA game and waved. I was a huge fan. I just think we joke about the very stiff and. Formal way that some sportscasters and
Bill.
No, and I think just being your authentic self was was something that Bill Walton was always doing.
He would drive some people crazy when it was a really tight ball game and he was just off in another solar system. But I mean it was great. If you didn't like it, turn it off. But I mean I really enjoyed his
sometimes the advocacy for the Pac-12 sometimes you know, sometimes irritated people. But I mean, I think he, you know, he was someone who was, you know, relentlessly you know, proud of the league that he played in. It's ironic that when he passes away just a day after the last ever Pac-12 event, the Pac-12 baseball tournament or whatever. I mean, it's you know, he never actually saw UCLA do anything in the Big Ten.
Right.
Which feels right.
Right.
You know, it does feel like, you know, UCLA, you know, in Bill Walton's life was a Pac-12 school, mm-hmm. and that's the way it's, you know, he's never going to have to see them, you know, pretending to be or trying to fit into the Big Ten in this new new era of college football and college athletics. So yeah, just a you know, a guy who injected,
talking about larger than life.
Yeah, injected color and you know, the energy into just about everything he did, and it's gonna be a little bit less fun without him.
And he was a great basketball player.
Wow,
my goodness, he was 21 for 22. Isn't that what was?
So completely before my time as a player. Like, it's, you know, my most vivid memory, and this is another opportunity to ask and to mention Jasher Cox, our good buddy, is that Jasher and I were watching. We were playing some video games, and we were I think it was the night, I know exactly what it was. It was the night before the 04 Iron Bowl, and we're watching, we're hanging out. I think we're both going to go to Tuscaloosa the next day, and as we turn off the PlayStation or whatever, it's the brawl is happening.
Yeah.
Ron Artest has gone into the stands in Detroit.
Exactly right.
And has confronted the fans, and it has led to a riot in Auburn Hills. Bill Walton was calling that game for ESPN, and what I remember is that there's a lot. I mean, Artest goes into the stands, and then there's a lot of silence from the announcers, and then Bill Walton just surveys the scene and says, "This is a disgrace." And he was, you know, and he was right.
Right.
But it was like, you know, it was one of, you know, just he found himself in a lot of, you know, incredible, you know, moments. And I mean, as a player and as a broadcaster and he was always interested. Like, he was something. Like, he was constantly trying to learn more and constantly trying to figure out things that he hadn't figured out before. And that's, and maybe that's what, you know, and that came through. When some random city would get mentioned, and he would talk about how, you know, they'd won championships for their lime production years in a row,
yeah,
or something.
He will be missed.
Maybe we need more of that.
Had anybody heard that he was?
He'd kept it. He had missed. I believe he'd missed the last couple of games he was scheduled to call this season. He had missed for health reasons, but okay. I don't believe he had gone public.
I don't believe he had gone public with any sort of
cancer diagnosis or anything like that.
I was very shocked, everyone. Yeah.
And knowing what I know about Bill Walton and his desire to keep things positive, I wonder if he would have wanted anyone outside of a select few people in his life to know about his illness.
Probably not.
They've got some great clips I've watched over the past week. If you get a chance, the story we were talking about when he took all the Celtics to see the Grateful Dead in Boston, that's a funny story. And they all met at Larry Bird's house, and they got limos, and I'm sure they had some adult beverages and whatever else, and they took them, and they had never seen anything like it. Then they became big fans. They were up on the stage kind of behind the curtain, he said, and they introduced, you know, to Garcia and all of them, and then they all became Dead fans. It's funny. Can you see Larry Bird going to the Deadhead concert? Wow.
It would be hard to stay anonymous when you're some of those guys.
Yeah, maybe a little country rock was going on in his.
Said Danny Ainge, his wife, wouldn't let him go to the concert.
Oh, man. Oh, speaking of concerts, reminder, next Friday, I'm not here.
Okay, what do you got?
Stones.
Oh.
Whoa. Right.
Next Friday, Stones in Atlanta. Yeah, bumped into a good friend today who worked the Stones at Jazz Fest. He said the tickets were $250. Now, you heard about what happened at Jazz Fest when the Stones played. They shut all the other stages down.
Yeah, they did not want anybody
playing and having to play in front of a couple of fans that might not be realizing that the Stones were playing or something.
Right.
So, I mean, when you go to Jazz Fest, there are multiple stages through all of the fields that bands are playing. But when the Stones played, they stopped everybody else. But Willie was saying, yeah, he's been a longtime patron of the fest, Jazz Fest, of the Jazz Festival. And so they had him helping out and paid him. He said it was $250. They sold 60,000 tickets at $250 each. But he got paid $300 to be there at the stage, setting up the stage and being able to be backstage. And we're like, wow, that's great. Now, you know this guy? You know he's not bullying either. I mean, because he scrolled through his phone and showed a close-up shot of Mick looking better than ever that he got right there at Jazz Fest. So, yeah, we're going to go see the Stones.
I mean, Mick is a testament to cardio, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely. You talk about the hardest working man in rock and roll. Mm-hmm. That is.
I mean, years ago, I remember, I think as a publicity thing, like some technology company, like attached a sensor, and it was like, let's find out how many steps Mick Jagger takes during a Rolling Stones show. And it was like 7 or 8 miles. I mean, it's just while singing.
Slow steps either.
While singing and that's something other musicians, they phase that out as they get older. And Mick really hasn't. It's still absolutely a trademark of the and I saw the set list. There's a couple. Like Keith does a couple of numbers part of the show,
that's
and
the way it's been.
Keith does a couple of vocals.
That's what Willie did say was that the scariest thing or the thing that you didn't want to hear. He said they're going through and they're setting up the marks where everybody's going to be and everything. And he was telling us about the stage and how it was set up. He said, but the one thing you didn't want to hear, you heard over the PA. We have a problem with Keith. It was just with the audio, but it's like, oh God, that's what everybody's been thinking. You know, it's amazing. You talk about amazing that he's still.
He'll bury us all.
He may. It's. I mean, I would say that almost 100% of anyone who's followed the Stones is surprised that he's still around.
They've cracked the code.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We will continue. We're going to switch over to some basketball. Get Brian's thoughts on. The Auburn roster, which appears to be set now. That and much more as we're just a quarter of the way in here on the Friday Drive.
AU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and you can join us by texting. The phone lines, unfortunately, still not working. Apparently, just about everything electronic was damaged in the lightning storm and the electric storm that we had over the weekend. Dan couldn't get in, couldn't. Be buzzed in. The buzzer wasn't working.
My code's not working anymore. It fried my
The buzzer doesn't work. We don't have any way of knowing when there's somebody at the door. The monitors aren't working and the buzzer doesn't work. We just have to.
So the phone lines. The phone lines might be working. We just might not know when someone is calling.
Yeah, the phone. I don't know that it's the phone lines. The phones are not working.
Yes,
that's the problem. Apparently, we're going to have to. All the equipment, all the phone equipment is going to have to be replaced in the building.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jeez.
Yeah. So thankfully we have multiple folks here. Wanted to get Brian's thoughts since Memorial Day. Was it
Monday?
I know Memorial Day was Monday. I'm thinking, when did Miles Kelly commit to Auburn? It was over the weekend, I believe. And then on Wednesday, he withdrew from the draft. So Miles Kelly, the 6'6 wing player from Georgia Tech, is the latest addition for Auburn's basketball roster.
Yeah, and I think it's a good addition. I don't think it's the perfect addition. I think a 1-2, a guy that could be the backup point guard and be a 2 would be the perfect, but it didn't work out that way for Auburn. But I think you're getting a guy that has great length, as you mentioned, has really good range on a 3-point shot. and as a scorer, right? A good, solid three-point shooter and a scorer, a guy. If he does end up coming off the bench, I think you're going to get a lot more production out of him than maybe some guys that came off the bench for Auburn last year. And a lot more efficiency, I would say. I think he's, you know, he's sort of been the man at Georgia Tech for a couple of years. And now he's coming to Auburn where he doesn't necessarily have to be the man. And hopefully that takes the pressure off him and he can just, you know, play within himself a little bit more. But I think it's a really nice pickup.
Yeah. We've seen in basketball where guys who felt pressure as the first option on a team or maybe were, you know, somewhat miscast as the leading option to, you know, the guy to take the bulk of the shots, the person, you know, the offense is centered around. But still a really highly effective basketball. I always think about, you know, people said when NBA teams tried to go with Robert Horry as their best player, it didn't necessarily work. But then when Robert Horry was allowed to be the third or fourth or fifth best option on a team.
Yeah, he was one of the best six men there was in all of basketball.
Exactly. I mean, I do wonder if there's something to that with a player like Kelly, who, I mean, Damon Stoudemire talked about how at times he was pressing, you know, trying to be the leading scorer, the best player on the team for Georgia Tech, and he's taking lumps that will benefit him. Damon Stoudemire even mentioned the possibility of, he said, wherever he ends up going next.
And he's saying he knew he wasn't going to be there.
Understanding that, yeah, I mean, that could be professional basketball somewhere else. That could be the NBA. That could be another college team. And Damon Stoudemire talked about, you know, hopefully these lessons pay off wherever the next place he is playing basketball. And it turns out that place is going to be Auburn. And we'll see if those lessons pay off as a as a guy going from being the leading option on a team to someone who is one of the really intriguing options and maybe a bench option for a team that's going to go into the season as I'd say a consensus top 10 national championship contender.
Oh yeah, I think this is as strong a roster as they had. You know, one of the strongest, maybe not the strongest, but one of the strongest for sure. I think Miles can play the two or the three. You know, Denver can play the two or the three.
Or the one.
Yep. We'll have to play someone probably.
Him and Pettifor both. I mean, that's the interesting thing is, I mean, I think right now the feeling is, well, he's definitely coming off the bench. I wonder if Miles Kelly is convinced he's definitely coming off the bench. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the battle between the three players at the wings.
Right.
Denver, Chad Baker-Mazzara, and Miles Kelly.
And then you got the freshman coming in there.
Jakai Howard.
Bruce loved what Chad brought off the bench last year. Remember, there were even times when, I mean, Chris Moore was getting starts at last season with Chad as the backup option. And I do wonder if we'll see. But with Miles Kelly, who really improved his rebounding over the course of his time at Georgia Tech, I do wonder if this could set up Chad as a sixth man who gets a ton of minutes because Bruce likes the kind of offense that he could bring with the backup group, and it could still be
somebody's exactly. Going to be a sixth man.
It could also
a lot of minutes.
Yeah, and everything I just said could be true of Miles Kelly too.
Yeah.
You know, he could be the sixth man who comes in and tries to provide a spark. But if it's Chad, if they feel good enough about JP Pegues, Denver Jones, Miles Kelly, Chaney Johnson, Jani Broome as a starting five, and you feel like, okay, give them 7, 8, 10 minutes to wear a team out, and then it's Chad Baker-Mazzara time. Like that'd be a tough thing for other teams to solve.
I think that's a good idea. I also wonder if, you know, Chad's a guy that still needs to mature and to be more responsible when he's on the floor. So I wonder if saying you're a starter now, you can't act like this anymore, might also be.
Yeah,
a better way to. I don't know the best way to handle that.
I think it's going to be really interesting, though. I mean, this is like you were saying, it's probably as deep a talent, deep with talent, as any team over the last 40, 50 years.
And so many options at every single position.
You know? Yeah,
you got both centers back. You got a power forward, plus they brought in Jaheim Hudson there.
Well, think about the good Auburn teams of the last, you know, 20, 30 years that brought a lot back, right? Like, think about the teams that then returned a lot of that production after a successful season. I would say this team returns as much as just about any other team that really achieved a lot in Auburn. I mean, you think about the team that won the regular season title with Jared and Bryce – They brought, I mean, and they were a preseason top 10, top 15 team accordingly. I would say this is something similar, except that, I mean, Jahni Broome is going to be in the mix for SEC Player of the Year, maybe a first-team All-American in the preseason. And I'm excited about Turtle. Like, I think there's, you know, they went out and got a, you know, really scrappy, you know, dirty work forward to come in and provide. Like, I mean, we've seen star-studded teams that didn't have the connective tissue, right? That, you know, it seems like the parts at Arkansas last year. Like, Arkansas last year was as talented in the preseason as, I mean, there were maybe 10 teams in college basketball that had the roster of Arkansas, but it was a roster that looked great on paper. It didn't have the guys that were willing to sacrifice their shots to, you know, emphasize defense and rebounding and running the floor in transition and all the stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. Like, it wasn't enough of that. I think they've added a couple of guys that seem like they fit the bill of, oh yeah, they'll, and you know, Turtle's one of them. Miles Kelly could be another one where they're getting more than, and even Jakai Howard with the athleticism. Like, you could be getting stuff that helps keep a great team afloat, even if it's not necessarily stuffing the box score.
Yeah, and I think JP Pegues is the most important player on this team, and I think he's a perfect pickup at point guard. So.
Well, that's what the one thing Auburn didn't have last year was an experienced experienced point guard.
And a guy
who can
be a leader and run the offense, too. I think it's so important for this team because there was obviously some immaturity with the team last year, and there was also some bigs on the team last year that needed to get the ball in better scoring positions, and I think a guy like JP Pegues can do that.
I'll always wonder if it would have been a different story for Aiden and Trey if they had been surrounded by players their own age. You know, if it had been a freshman and sophomore led team, maybe the energy would have been different. But when you have veterans who are in win now mode and might be at the end of their college basketball career, Jalen Williams playing his fifth year, Jahni Broome playing his fourth year of college basketball and thinking, I think, for most of the year that it very well could be his last year of college basketball. When you have veterans like that at the front court and leading the team, it's a gamble to go with even really talented youth at the point guard position. And I think Aiden Holloway was, I mean, there's no arguing that he was a talented player coming out of high school. It's just, was he ready to be the point guard for a veteran loaded team in win now mode, or did he need some seasoning and some time to learn about how college basketball works? Trey, you know, I think Trey's it's really interesting that Trey found another home as a, you know, maybe the starting point guard at a place like Michigan, even though Michigan was the worst team in the Big Ten last year, and they're starting over with May from FAU as the new coach. Like, it's still, I mean, it's a fresh start for both of them, but I think, like, it probably was to have such a gap between the most veteran players on the team and the youth at the point guard position was maybe one of the reasons that at times things felt so disjointed. Although, again, we're talking about a team that won, 27, 28
games?
Yeah,
they did go 27-7.
Yeah, 27-7, and they were one of the top 16 teams on the board in the NCAA tournament. But when it was going wrong, it felt like that was part of the issue.
Yeah, and it's obvious, Brian. I mean, that's Bruce didn't want to go too much in detail, but I mean, that's one of the reasons he doesn't want that kind of pressure on Tahad Pettiford, at least to start. Right. But he's going to have to play. He's going to have to play probably most of his minutes at point.
Maybe. I don't know.
Wouldn't you think? I mean, when you've got Denver, Chad, and Miles that can all play the two,
right?
It's going to be tough to get a whole lot of minutes at the two.
I guess it depends how many minutes he's going to get, period.
Yeah.
Right?
But I would think, you know, if he's going to play double-digit minutes, most of them are probably going to come at the point.
Maybe early. I think once we get into the heat of SEC play and postseason, I think Pegues is the guy that's going to have to play 33, 34, 35 minutes.
That's what. So it's going to be tough, I think, to get a lot of minutes.
He's going to have to find a way.
It doesn't look as difficult as it might in Tuscaloosa to try to find a lot of minutes for a young guard.
I could see Bruce trying to keep Bet Pegui's number closer to 30. He's played a lot of college basketball in his career. You need him healthy. You need him effective at the end of games.
Well, definitely in the preseason.
You need him out
in the non-conference game.
Sure. I think you need him out of foul trouble, which is another point that people don't really think about when you talk about Bruce Pearl's minutes and how he distributes them. But I think a lot of that depends on how they feel about the other options of point guard. Like how many minutes you're giving J.P. Pegues. If it's 28, maybe that's because you feel great about what's happening in the 12 minutes that he's on the bench at the point guard position between Denver and Tahad Pettiford. If it's 34, 35, you know, maybe it's because you feel like you're kind of reliant on J.P. Pegues to be out there and directing traffic. And it could go either way, depending on how things look. I think it is interesting they didn't add more point guard minutes beyond JP.
I think they tried.
They definitely tried. Well, Duke Miles was a topic on this show for two weeks. The Pitt transfer, Dior Johnson?
No, not him. The other guy with three names, including two legendary basketball names.
The one with SMU. Ivy Curry.
Ivy Curry, yeah. Jordan Ivy Curry.
Yeah, Ivy Curry, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no kidding.
I guess there was that the Ivy from Purdue a couple years ago. He's a pretty good player,
Jordan
too.
Jordan Curry, a couple of decent basketball
generational talents. Yeah.
But, yeah, they tried. So, I mean, but it's going to be really interesting here. I mean, so now, obviously, yes, Denver and Tahad have to play the extra minutes here at the point. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time as we continue here. You can text us on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840.
Do want to shout out Skybar for sponsoring the Drive hotline, even if it's not working right now. Not their fault, I don't think.
By no means.
I don't believe, I mean, no evidence right now that Skybar knocked our phone lines out. I want to say thanks to Skybar for sponsoring the hotline, which we promise will get working soon. And Southeastern Industrial Contractors presenting the text box 334-564-1840.
We don't want to forget Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Oh, no. We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll get to the musings, even though it's Friday.
Did you bring some more?
I did not.
Have you tried it?
No.
I
got to get some.
Yeah. We will talk about that as we continue here on the Friday Drive.
All right,
Is your kid looking to improve their football skills this summer? If so, come out to the Back to the Doghouse.
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number one here on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Man, the weather has just been it's been great. It's getting a little bit warmer, but still nowhere near the humidity that we're going to have as football camps and some of the summer workouts get started. Brian, you mentioned when Brian's normally with us, it's on Mondays, and he has his Monday musings. Did your Monday musings this past week? I read them. I'm trying to recall. What was it this past Monday? You wrote it.
Old too.
I read it, but.
let me think here. Oh, it was Eye of the Tiger, right?
Yes, that's right. Sure was. Survivor.
Yeah. Yep. So that was 42 years ago. Wow. And the one thing that I thought was interesting for that is that Sylvester Stallone, who was, I guess, writing and directing Rocky II, He asked Queen if he could use Another One Bites the Dust. They turned him down, so he went to Survivor and say, "Hey, write a song for this movie." And this is what they wrote.
What's cool is that the opening, the music, the beats that you hear were done in time to the punches.
Yes,
that they got cool the video too. From that they were trying to work with.
Wow.
Bump, 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 bump. You know, so
unbelievable.
Yeah. So that's cool.
That's similar to the origin of Ghostbusters, isn't it? Where they wanted Huey Lewis in the News to either wanted Huey Lewis in the News to record a song for Ghostbusters, or they just wanted to use I Want a New Drug as the theme to Ghostbusters, and Huey Lewis in the News turned them down, or they couldn't reach an agreement or something, and so the studio went to Ray Parker Jr. and said, make us a song that sounds like
Ray Parker Jr. much more famous than radio.
And they said, make us a song that sounds like I Want a New Drug, and he came up with Ghostbusters, and then Huey Lewis in the News sued, and I think eventually got like writing credit on it because it was.
I didn't realize that part.
Yeah, it's not quite.
The music is it's very reminiscent.
Now, I believe I think Eye of the Tiger is different enough from Another One Bites the Dust that there's never been plagiarism about it. But it is. It does seem like it's a. If Queen had said yes, there would have never been Eye of the Tiger, and if Huey Lewis in the News had said yes, there never would have been the Ray Parker Jr. Ghostbusters song.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. And of course, as you mentioned, it's sponsor one of our sponsors right here on ESPN 106.7 is Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Delicious, homegrown right here in the state of Alabama, available at Publix, Piggly Wiggly's, Renfro's, and locally in town you can find them at Kroger's too. It's just really delicious. They got an original and hot. Give it a try.
All right, we will get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done here on the Friday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Friday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this start of the weekend. I had to, again, it's been difficult trying to keep up with what day it is. Honestly, I mean, yesterday felt like Monday because we hadn't been on the air for a few days. But it's already Friday. Hope everybody has a nice weekend planned. Going to be a busy weekend. We'll get into that here momentarily. For Auburn football with quite a few very prominent visitors coming in. Do want to let you know and remind you that hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Once again, we apologize for the technical problems that we had due to the storm earlier this week, or actually last weekend, and our phone lines still down, so we cannot take your phone calls. But again, we appreciate the good folks at Skybar sponsoring the Drive hotline. Hopefully we'll have that back very shortly. But you can text us with your thoughts, questions, comments on the Drive text box.
That's right. The text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840. They also sponsor the podcast, Drew. We should have a podcast of today's show.
Oh, good, good.
Apologies.
I did get comments about the fact that there wasn't one from yesterday.
Yeah, apologies about that. We barely had a show yesterday, so again, sorry that there wasn't a podcast, but I mean, the show started with 20 minutes of dead air yesterday, so like we're doing our best to get this thing on the air right now amid like massive technical issues.
I started yesterday.
You nailed it, from what I hear.
Yeah,
I was driving in, and all I heard
was
the
problem was it didn't go out over there.
I heard the intro, and
yeah. And then you didn't hear anything else.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Bill was up next there. But it was So anyways, thanks to Southeastern Industrial Contractors sponsoring the podcast and the text box. And as always, shout out to Skybar sponsoring our hotline.
All right, that's Dan. I'm Bill. Brian Matthews, who's normally with us on Mondays. We didn't have a show that was scheduled because Monday was Memorial Day. B-Matt, good enough to be with us here on this Friday. And Coach Don Dunn also with us here in the studio. Brian, though, I mean, this weekend, it's very big. Auburn already off to a good start in recruiting. They're top 10 around there or so with their 11 commitments. But they have some very prominent players visiting this weekend.
They do. They've got a dozen players coming in this weekend. They'll have over 30 over the next 2 weeks. It's going to be a wild couple of weeks with that in camps going on. This week's group is very talented. There's four players in the Rivals 100. You have the number two quarterback in the country, Naheem Alford, from Parker in Birmingham. This kid is one of those tall, shut-down type corners, extremely athletic. I mean, if you watch his tape, returning interceptions, he's a weapon to take it to the house every time.
He's been committed to Ohio State for a little while.
Yes, he has been since last year. But this is big, Auburn getting him in for the first official visit weekend. This is a visit that was put together kind of late, surprised everybody, but this will be big for Auburn if they're going to try to flip an Ohio State commit. And if you remember the last two classes, Hugh Freeze and his staff have flipped a lot of players that were committed to other Power Five good schools, including Alabama,
and
Ohio State.
And he is
State.
From closer to home than some of the other guys that have been flipped.
Yeah, so I think Auburn still has plenty of work to do here, but don't discount Auburn and its big getting on campus. And, of course, you got Big Cat coming up here at the end of July, so that'll be a second opportunity to get some of these guys back. But you also got Caleb Cunningham here. He's the number three wide receiver in the country from over in Mississippi. I think he's pretty open in his recruiting.
He's like the top player in Mississippi.
Yeah, he is, and he's also a big physical outside receiver in the same mold as a Cam Coleman or Perry Thompson. Would fit perfectly into this Hugh Freeze type offense. You've got Blake Woodbey, the number six cornerback of the country. He recently decommitted from Ohio State about a week or two ago, and now he's coming to Auburn. So I think Auburn is definitely a team to watch closely here. He is from Baltimore, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, St. Francis in Baltimore. So, and what's interesting about all 12 of these official visitors are all 12 from different states. So you can see that Auburn is stretching its wings out a little bit more.
Yeah, so only one from the state of Alabama that's offered.
Yep, it's pretty wild. And then you have Elijah Melendez. He's the number two inside linebacker in the country. He currently committed from Miami. He's from Kissimmee, Florida. And, buddy, he is a big 6'2", 225, 30-pound heat-seeking missile. He will play really, really physical. He's got pretty good athleticism for his size. And I think DJ Durkin has made him a really high priority for Auburn. So, of course, Auburn flipped Connor Lue from Miami last year, so we'll see if Auburn can do the same with Elijah Melendez.
We were talking with I was watching you and Don Dunn look at some footage, and we won't discuss the young man in question, but I asked Don something. He was off the air. I'd love to know, like, sort of share that for the audience. Like, when you were evaluating footage of a defensive line prospect, if you were looking at film of a potential recruit, what sort of things were you looking for that would stand out to you or make it seem like this guy was ready to move on to the next level?
Yeah, number one is effort. Does he play hard? And then change of direction. Can he move? Is he on the ground a lot? Does he have good balance, good hand placement, things like that? And can he run? Now, it's changed a lot since I coached. I had the inside guys, which were more back then the physical pluggers. Now, with the offenses, the spread, the up-tempo, you have to have guys that can run sideline to sideline. But I would think, foot speed, all those type of things, athletic, and not on the ground. If you saw a guy, if you're watching tape and, four or five plays and every time he's on the ground, that's not a good sign. And, balance.
Well, if the offensive linemen that he's facing at this level are putting him on the ground, one might worry that when he moves up to if you're not hitting double A pitching, we're probably not going to move you to the majors.
If you watch a lot of tape, some guys are always on the ground. Whether they get knocked down, they just can't. They don't have balance, and that's
on
one
skates.
They're just slipping around. They're on the ground, and all those things. But now it's. You got to be an athlete, and athletic ability, change of direction is so important, balance.
You'd rather put size on an athlete as a defensive lineman than take a guy who's really impressive because he's big.
Well, even back when I coached, the best example would be the young man we moved from a tight end to defensive end and then to tackle.
Jay Ratliff.
Oh, yeah.
And he hated every second of coming over to defense.
Oh, yeah. And he really didn't want to come inside.
And he definitely didn't want to come play for me. And because, it's a little more glamorous as a defensive end. Now I'm going to be a D tackle, but what a great player.
Yeah.
And, he played, 7 years in the pros, I think, or more.
I hope he paid you back a bunch of money for getting him up.
No. But I think that what's the old saying, checks in the mail.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
it's all part of the job, right?
Yeah.
It's all part of the job.
A lot of those guys back then, we were talking off the air, your defensive ends would move down.
Mm-hmm.
A Spencer Johnson type kid, remember him?
Yep.
Athlete.
Played as a true freshman.
Yes. And
at like 235, 240, right?
Yeah. And then you had your typical nose guards like Josh Thompson, Tommy Jackson, DeMarco McNeil, who was a great athlete.
Yes, he
would fool you.
Oh, DeMarco. DeMarco
great basketball player.
Yeah, outstanding. I mean, a guy that averaged 15 rebounds a game.
Yeah, and he was in such bad shape when he first got here. Remember, bless his heart. But what a great player.
Would Zach get mixed in there, too?
Yeah.
Zach Clayton?
Sure.
We don't shout out.
Let me forget Zach.
Yeah, we don't shout out Zach.
I think he's still local. He might come get me.
We don't shout out Zach Clayton.
But I went and watched them practice and play a lot because it was so easy. And he had good coaches at Opelika. You know, Spence, one of the best that ever did it.
That was a fine. That was a definite fine.
A lot of people didn't even recruit him.
Yep.
But what a great player. And he got bigger and better, smart. But every one of those kids, the thing they had, they loved football, and they were good people. Great kids. Loved every one of them. Never had, knock on my head, and would, a lot of trouble out of those guys either. And as a coach, you don't want to get those phone calls after midnight.
No, you don't.
But anyway, yeah, but just, you know, that athletic type kid, that's changed. You know, what, 30, 40 years ago, when I was in college, you know, the big guys were on defense, and, you know, they just slugged.
Well, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that a shotgun offense, right, was right. somewhat.
Oh, that was third down, maybe.
Exactly. I mean, now that it's moved to,
exactly.
I mean, what guys were doing. You know, it is, and we'll see more and more of it. Like Mike Leach and other, I mean, there are some real, you know, pioneers, right? Some guys that paved the way for what football's starting to look like. And there's a lot of those guys who emphasized the forward pass in the 80s and 90s.
Right, and I can remember when the run and shoot or whatever you want to call it came in, and most head coaches hated it. They didn't want to do it. Like Coach Saban hated it, and. The guys that were ahead of the game, like the Leeches, we'd never seen anything like that. You know, you just wear a team down. And the no huddle, the hurry up, that was unheard of. It was almost like they were cheating, but they weren't. So everybody had to adapt. And that's where you get guys that can run. It'd be tough for some of these guys to play nowadays.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Hal Mummy. And people sort of made fun of him at first.
Right.
It was like,
you're
only going to do that when you got lesser talent.
Right, right.
And
it's not going to work.
The guy looks like a beach bum, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
had a towel around his neck.
Everybody's doing
well, that's, that. That's how it's happened is that so folks will use, I mean, think about whether it was the forward pass or the spread offense. I mean, it was used by teams with lesser talent to neutralize the talent advantage, but then once the team with the talent advantage starts doing it too, you're in real trouble.
Like Florida, right?
Yeah.
Then Spurrier and with Urban.
Yeah. Right.
I think some of the best coaching jobs that Auburn did, especially defensively, was against the Florida Gators, right?
Right.
They were an incredible team, and
y'all
usually held them down well below their average.
I would. We had good players. Really, I mean that, athletes.
Oh yeah,
and the good cornerback we had. Remember, oh man.
But you're right. These days, you just don't have you don't see as many just big guys that can't move.
Big slugs.
But, I mean, they're only there for like short yardage
or goal line.
You might
goal line out spread.
That's right. But I mean, you're going to see those guys generally will just come in when you think they're going to try to run a quarterback sneak or just going to try to come right at you.
You know, when I was first started coaching or playing, you never saw a ball thrown to the sideline like a quick screen to the sideline. Now they just throw it out there and let the guy go.
Now you'll see offenses where the fundamental play.
You never saw that.
I mean, and a lot of that is when. If the talented receiver gets better and better, you got to figure out ways to get receivers the ball the way you used to get your running back the ball. Like we used to have a running back who needed the ball 30 times a game. Now you have receivers who deserve. You got to maximize the number of touches and plays like that. Those long handoffs. Those Andy Reid really sort of using the swing pass to get more touches for the running back, or using the wide receiver
get them in space
to get more touches for a superstar receiver. Like that's really, it's taken over. Folks have really, and I would say Lane Kiffin's work at Alabama is also sort of in this category advancing a group that was in. Not necessarily a different era, but it's stark if you watch Alabama football from 2011, 2012.
Well, it's unbelievable the change.
And then you see what they were doing a couple years later when Lane Kiffin was the offensive coordinator. Really, what they've done ever since.
Exactly.
And I would say that's a similar because a lot of offenses were doing that, thinking, oh, we can beat Auburn or Ole Miss, and if we're running the right system, Alabama can have way more talent. Not when Alabama's running that system too, and they're running it effectively. And that's
not when they have four first round receivers. I saw where Jalen Waddle's now going to be one of the highest paid receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you got four guys like that.
First round receivers. Yeah.
Then you're crazy if you don't run that kind of offense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you got a pretty good, they had pretty good quarterbacks too.
They did.
Yeah.
And you know, one thing, I don't know if we want to get into this or not, but if you look at football today, you look at NIL, you look at the changes that are coming with the revenue sharing, you're going to have to assign values, a value to different players, right?
Yeah, you would sure think so. I mean, that's what they're going to do. First of all, to award the money to the players from 2016.
I wonder if move like when players are being paid directly by schools, I wonder if it will be more of a flat rate per sport, or if you get into position values and things like that. You know, I don't know,
because how can it not eventually turn into pay for play, and you're being rewarded paid for your performance.
I know the algorithm to determine the settlement, you know, is going to factor in position and how you played.
I think it already is
NIL, right? They're already having to say we can't pay a inside linebacker this much money. You know, it's just too much. You know, you got to put a value on everything. Right. And that's a big part. And if you go back 20-25 years, you know, quarterback's always going to be a high value, but back then running backs. Right, linebackers, and now running backs.
It's sort of like following the NFL. Right. Mm-hmm. Running backs are like, it's just a bonus if you get one, but it's not the urgent. It's not the most important thing.
Still can be very effective and still have big impacts in games, but not compared at least positional value to a edge rusher, left tackle, a wide receiver,
corners,
those type of guys.
Yeah, if you're a linebacker being taken in the first round nowadays in the NFL, you have like a Hall of Fame ceiling in the eyes, because otherwise they would just say, well, it's a position where it's not worth it, even if you get, you know, unless you get an all pro level player, investing a first round pick in something like that, it's negligible because there could be similar talents available. I mean, it really is. You look at the NFL draft, and that's probably going to tell you, you know, the positions that college football is going to prioritize moving forward in that sort of environment, because it's quarterbacks and it's pass rushers and it's superstar receivers and it's first rate corners and it's left tackles. Yep. I mean, that's where not that you can't be a difference maker if you don't play one of those positions, because there are safeties and centers and tight ends and inside defensive tackle. Like, there are guys that can be absolute superstars. But the positions where people are paying a priority right now, paying a premium, it's probably closer to those. You look at the last couple first rounds, and you can see which positions really stand out in modern football.
Yep.
All right, we'll get to our first break. We'll get Brian to talk a little more about some of the other visitors Auburn has. If you've got anything you'd like to add in, text us on the Drive text box, 334-564-1840. It's brought to you by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Inspired by the bold bison.
ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Well, welcome back into the Friday Drive. Yeah, we're here. You can tell Don and I are the old guys. We're talking about surgeries.
You know, hey, we'll say it anyway.
We're the orthopedic clinic, though. Yeah. You know, it's one of our sponsors.
Yeah, we love the orthopedic clinic. And shout out to Champ Baker, as always. One of our favorites, the doc. What was his team, Bill?
He was the orthodox.
He was the orthodox.
Spelled with a C-S.
Yeah. That's funny.
Orthodox.
Yeah. Orthodox. Not one of the two.
Because at the beginning, his partner was Joe Champy's team doctor, Ron Hunt.
Yeah.
And Ron brought Champ in, and they were the two of them called their team the Paradox.
That's funny.
They were a pair of doctors.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's great.
So, shout out to Champ. Tell him some stories there.
Good man. Well, that's one of the things in fantasy sports. You want to have a good team name. Yep. You got to have a good team name, or you don't feel like your team. How many names is your? You've had at least
just two.
You just gone through two.
Yeah, just two. Just the blood. I mean, because I named Scott's team back in the day. We were the young'uns, which turned into the young guns. But no, we're just switching to the Blockbusters now, and that's where we're going to stay.
Slump Busters. Well, to tell you, Don, to tell you how old our fantasy league is. When we started this, it was the spring of 1983 or 4.
You are kidding me.
I hadn't joined yet.
No, you hadn't because, yeah, you weren't alive yet.
Yeah.
Mac McCarthy was Sonny Smith's top assistant, and Mac had seen a story in Sports Illustrated about rotisserie baseball. So we got together, and the first year that we did this, it was going to be everybody put $100 in the pot, and then the winner was going to take like half or whatever. And it was not a time where as a young guy, I had a whole lot of extra money.
Right.
So it took three of us to come up with $100.
Oh, yeah.
That was me, Floyd, and then my best friend Floyd, and then Mark Green, who was a very talented writer and broadcaster. Great guy. Goodness, hard to believe he's been gone for quite a while now. Mm. But it took the three of us to come up with $100. So our team's name was and still is Three's Company.
That's awesome.
Even though having three of you for quite some time,
we've only had two we weren't going to change it.
Shout out to Floyd as always. One of our favorites.
Yeah. I didn't realize it had been that long. I mean,
yeah, the Rotisserie League in New York or something had started the year before. So we've been doing it ever since.
I can tell people that I am part of one of the oldest fantasy baseball leagues in America.
You absolutely
I think
are.
I think it's absolute, like without exaggeration.
And so I would say there aren't many that have been running as long.
Consecutive.
Perry Hines has been in it since the beginning.
A charter member.
Perry's partner was Dennis Wilson, who retired as the head of HBR, and whose son did shoulder surgery on me from the orthopedic clinic.
I don't want to get anybody. Hasn't Coach Champion's talked about?
Joe was the original commissioner of the league.
That's right. So Joe Champion was involved too. But it's a fun
man. There were some legendary names. I mean, Dr. Jim Matthews was in it. Bill Beckwith was one of the original team owners. Buddy Davidson was an original team owner.
Oh man!
I mean, yeah, there were some legendary names.
We loved Granger. Right, David Granger was in that was as well, who was a frequent caller of the show.
And then we had the guy who liked to trade the most back in the day was the gymnastics coach way back in the day, Tabor Medill. I mean, there's some names of people like who
amazing yeah. stuff.
All right, so we're here on the Friday edition of The Drive again. If you're tuning in. Our phones, the phone lines are not working. Hopefully we'll have them back. We had that bad electrical storm this past weekend. Knocked everything off, and we weren't able to be on the air until yesterday. But we've gotten back the last couple of days. Got Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here with us in the studio along with Don Dunn. And Brian, you mentioned a couple of the guys that were coming in this weekend. Very important weekend. Now, I would caution people, don't have the expectations that Auburn's going to get a bunch of commits right now. Now, I'm not saying they may not get a commitment or two, I mean, these are guys making their first official visits.
Yeah. The way I look at it now, a lot of these guys have done all their spring visits. They've got all their offers. They're probably going to go on 2, 3, or 4 official visits in May, June. And then have a decision sometime during July or August as they work up before their senior season. That's usually the
plan. Mm-hmm.
So Auburn does have 12 coming in. I'm not expecting any commitments over the weekend, but that, you never know sometimes. It may just click for somebody. But some other guys I want to mention, Amari Winston. He's a tight end from Calhoun, Georgia, who committed to Texas, I think last December, November.
Auburn has really placed an emphasis. You can see they want to use their tight ends. Auburn did last year, and they've got a very deep tight end situation now. But most of those guys are upperclassmen.
Yeah, three of those guys are going to be moving on, including Rivaldo next year. So they're going to have to reload in that room. So, you look at a guy like Winston. He's from Georgia, much closer to Auburn than Texas is, of course.
Right.
And Auburn giving that opportunity for early playing time. So I think that's a guy to keep an eye on. Another guy to keep an eye on, I would say, is Broderick Schull. He's a big
lineman,
tall,
yeah,
offensive tackle from Bixby, Oklahoma.
He's one of those really highly rated guy.
He is, and he's one of those offensive linemen that likes poetry and, you know, 60s and 70s music and collecting stuff. So he's
were just talking Bill Walton a while ago.
I think he's a
guy. Is it a Steely Dan? You're telling me we're recruiting like a Tom Petty fan? What's going on here?
No, it's like.
But he's a guy that had a really good trip in the spring. He's coming back, and I think Auburn's in really good shape for him going into this weekend.
He should watch Get Back. I bet he'd like it.
Yeah.
I bet he'd like Get Back on Disney Plus.
Another
so I haven't watched Let It Be. I need to.
Ty Buster will be here. He committed to Auburn back in March. He is from Kannapolis, North Carolina. I think he's a big, powerful guard, a guy who's also got some athleticism, be able to pull really well. So he's one to watch. Amari Winston. Oh, I've already mentioned him. I mentioned him. Trying to think, who have I not mentioned?
I don't know.
Kalen Edwards, the big defensive lineman from Dyersburg, Tennessee. He was committed to Auburn, decommitted, now has visits to Auburn, Louisville, and possibly Georgia here at the end of the thing. So we'll see how that goes. I think there is still interest on both sides there, but I'm not sure how much. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. And then, I mentioned Blake Woodby already. So I think that's everybody. I think that's all 12.
Interesting that there's a former Ohio State commit and Auburn trying to flip another Ohio State commit.
I mean, eight guys coming this week.
Yeah, and then, of course, when you were talking about guys that Auburn flipped, Kay and Lee had been an Ohio State commit.
Another one, yeah. So they have really excelled at doing that with some very high-profile players. And if you look at a lot of these players.
Caleb Burton transferred to
Caleb
Auburn.
Caleb Burton transferred from
Ohio State after being one of the top 100 players in the country coming out of high school.
You mentioned Kay and Lee, Keldrick Falk, Connor Liu. Those three players started
three of Auburn's,
for Auburn.
Three of Auburn's better players.
Right, three guys that got late, three guys they flipped. So don't count out somebody for Auburn just because they're committed to another school right now.
I almost gave the phone number. 334-564-1840. That is the Drive text box.
Was Jeremiah Cobb committed somewhere else, or was he? He wasn't a flip.
No, he was the one guy that stuck with Auburn through the whole thing.
He was still committed to Auburn beforehand, and looks to be somebody who could have a pretty big second season.
I would say so.
You know, I mean, of the, I don't know. I mean, you just mentioned Kay and Lee. I mean, Kay and Lee and Jeremiah Cobb would be. Connor Liu, you know, our three. Keldrick Falk would be very, very easy to pick.
Those are starters.
Yeah, I mean, they're true sophomore starters that you have on this team. There might be another one, but I think those are the ones who really stand out as the guys that you're going to see a lot of from that first signing class.
Maybe the only true sophomore starters that you know for sure right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean,
I've got my scratch through depth chart right here.
I mean, Terrence Love's going to play a lot, but probably not. He's probably not a starter.
He could be a starter.
Probably not a starter right now, but I would say he's in the mix for snaps at safety.
I think
that's probably the whole list though, at least of your starters right now, and
especially true sophomores, because I mean, Alec McPherson's.
Those are significant players.
They are, and all of them,
pretty much all of them, Jeremiah Cobb the exception, are guys that Hugh Freeze was able to add after getting the Auburn job in December, and he was able to flip those guys before the second signing period. I mean, a promising start on the recruiting front.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got about 25 minutes left. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 20 minutes or so of the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, Coach Don Dunn, all here in the studio, and Drew at the controls. Look, and I see some pictures posted of Toomer's Corner, where they're getting ready for the golf celebration. Going to have the they cleaned all the trees out for another re-rolling.
Yep.
Coming up tonight, I believe 6:30 is things are going to get started. How about that? We haven't mentioned that today, Brian, but I mean,
amazing.
Great performance by the Auburn men's golf team to win its first national title.
Yeah, I mean, that was really fun getting to watch that and seeing those young men get it done. You know, Coven, a great freshman, and then you got the senior, J.M. Is it J.M.? All right. Trying to think of his name. Anyway, just coming down the stretch there when it's tied 2-2 and pulling it out for Auburn, that was just incredible.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. So, you know, as we mentioned earlier, going to be perfect weather for it.
J.M. Butler, that's what it is. Yeah.
And this is he's the senior, got a chance to have just about the rest of the team back in another outstanding class being brought in. So.
Yeah, number one junior player in the country is coming in for next class. So
things looking pretty good there for Auburn men's golf. And of course, I mean, the women, made it to the final eight as well. So, good way to sort of just about wrap things up. I guess track and field hadn't finished up yet.
I don't think so. They're usually the last.
We're about wrapping things up. As here we are, I mean, it's the last day in May.
Yep. Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
Getting hot around here.
I think 90 days until your week one college football kickoff now. We're approaching. We're getting closer to.
Like 3 months from today, right?
Three months from today. SEC Media Days in about 6 weeks or so
Dallas this year?
Yes, head to Dallas. Same week as the
Major League All-Star game there in at the same time.
Yeah, it's going to be the Monday and Tuesday of the Major League Baseball All-Star game and Home Run Derby. We'll have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday SEC Media Days going on in the Dallas greater Dallas area, Dallas Arlington area.
And we have times for the first three games also.
Yes. And no 11 o'clock at least.
Yes. Alabama, A&M, New Mexico at night. California,
Cal,
a little warm.
2:30.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah, it's usually pretty warm September 7th,
God,
if I remember correctly.
It's usually awful. Yeah. It is usually awful.
Yeah. We looked at the week two. We looked at the week two schedule a little bit there, Brian, and I think that Auburn the big week two game is Texas Michigan this season, and that will not be at 2:30. I think that's either going to get the 11 or the prime time.
Yeah, I think it's an early game. I heard.
I want to say it's the big noon. I want to say it's a big noon game for Fox.
Well, I mean that's what they. I mean the thing is ABC is going to want a lot of big games at 11 o'clock as well.
Yeah.
To go up against the Fox broadcast at 11.
Yep. Although I imagine they wouldn't be afraid to put a big game at 2:30 as well on ESPN ABC.
But I mean they won't mind putting it. You know where people used to feel like SEC games at 11 o'clock aren't going to be the big games. I think that's going to change now with their three windows: 11, 2:30, and then in the evening. Don, we've talked about it many times here.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about it, what was the hottest game you can recall being a part of?
Wow, there was a bunch of them. When I was at Western Kentucky, we played at Alabama, you know, a money game for us, of course, and I think it was 11 o'clock kickoff in early September. It was miserable. But here, you know, I can remember some of those games, and I would go home and be sunburned here leaving the stadium.
Was there one at Ole Miss?
I'll tell you.
Yeah, that was before Don. That game in
before
Jackson.
Me.
Game in Jackson in 1990.
Right, okay.
The hottest game I've ever been at. Were you there, Brian?
I don't think I was.
I was working for the ticket office. Yeah. I had to wear a coat and tie.
Ugh.
And I was working the player's gate. And they ran out of, not just out of ice, they ran out of water before the first quarter was done. And there were people being... I mean, carried out on stretchers
in Mississippi,
passing out in Jackson.
It's always sticky and hot anyway.
The humidity was just different. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's like even though you think of Louisiana as swamp,
Mississippi,
I think that's what it was.
I'll never forget my first weekend in Oxford, Mississippi, when I came from Reno.
Oh.
And the first 3 days I'm there, I met Noma, Zoni, and all the guys. I laid sod. They'd all bought houses. I was late getting there. I didn't get hired till summer. They'd been there with Coach Tuberville. I said, y'all going to talk football or are we going to coach football? I'm just laying sod everywhere. And I was dying. And that Mississippi heat coming from the mountains of Reno, I said, holy moly, the mosquitoes as big as dogs. It was awful.
I would think that you coached in a couple of Auburn LSU games at Jordan
Hare. They were using – well, yeah. Yeah, but
– 04 and 06 were a couple of –
they were pretty warm.
2:30 early in the season, and those were – 06 is the one. I think that's 7-3 with the one-yard – I think it's a Brandon Cox QB sneak is the only is the only touchdown there. But that thing is –
that was warm.
That was a warm day and, you know, not a lot of cloud cover and some old school. I always think when things stay low scoring and physical and, you know, those kind of games where the punt is super important because it could really influence things. I think about some of those early, you know, I mean, the 04 LSU's 10-3.
Yeah.
And that's a game that would, you know, punt goes wrong there, probably would have changed things pretty drastically.
You worry about the moisture on the ball if you're long snapping and quarterbacks. And back then when dropping everybody was snaps. Under center.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, 04 LSU is probably more memorable because of, you know, what it led to in the, you know, overall in that season.
Oh, yeah. And that guy jumped on the center's back.
That was Jason Taylor, right?
That's Cadillac yanking the ball out of the guy's hand,
right,
too, which is, you know, on the pick six, you know, taking it away from Corey Webster.
Right.
And then the Courtney Taylor touchdown there at the end. But
and then the guy jumped on the other guy's back. That took some guts to call that.
Leaping the extra point.
That is a rule.
Auburn gets two shots at the extra point. Yeah, right.
Thank goodness.
That touchdown to missed extra point swing.
Now I can remember the coldest game, Bill, when I was at Montana State and my wife had on my ski suit and she took hot chocolate and snops into the game. And we played Idaho with the quarterback Freeze. Remember the good player Freeze played at Idaho? I've never been so cold, and it was miserable. I had on these big boots. I couldn't move. I was like the Michelin man. But my wife, bless her heart, sat out there, and the wives had hot chocolate and snops. So after the game, they were feeling no pain.
Oh, yeah.
But I was froze. I couldn't warm up. I went home and took a shower for about 3 hours.
When you get that cold, it sinks in.
And it was like the plastic on the helmets was cracking and snapping.
Yeah.
They shouldn't play it. But, you know, those guys out there, just another day for them. Montana.
Wow. Shouldn't be doing anything in that weather.
No, it was terrible. I don't remember. I think it was like 20 below. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I think there's a real so
with the wind chill. Yeah.
This past NFL playoffs, there was the Dolphins Chiefs game that was played in dangerously cold weather.
That's when
they had to go back to the ice bowl with the guy was.
Had his shirt off, riding the snow down, shoving.
I believe there have been some hypothermia-related.
Yeah, didn't two guys die in the backyard?
Injury,
or
either. I think some fingers got hacked off, or whatever you had to do there with the cold weather. But I mean, there's in Kansas City, there's thinking, you know, if Arrowhead ever needs, you know, if they need to move on to the next thing, should it be indoor? Should it be something they need to have the option?
As long as I'm watching on TV, I think they ought to.
I love those games to watch on television.
That's right.
And the snow and the mud, but I don't coach
you're
them.
Not, you're not itching for
you know that game round, we yeah. played up at
Arkansas.
Tuscaloosa.
Arkansas. Yeah, you're
and
right.
We were sleeted and we won 9-0 or something. Oh, that was freezing.
It was. It was.
But
it was
I didn't feel it that
mess,
day.
But you're right.
When we beat Alabama, I didn't feel anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could have had my shirt off. That'd have been ugly, though.
Yeah, some great things. Hey, speaking of really interesting stories, how about Birmingham Southern baseball?
Unbelievable.
How about they are?
What a way to go out.
They're starting. Their first game in the College World Series is today, and today is the day. The last day of Birmingham of Southern.
School. Wow, that's incredible.
That's crazy. I hope they win it all. Bless their heart.
It is. I do too. I mean, they've always had a good baseball program.
Division three college World Series starting on Friday. It's the same day that the after 168 years.
Wow.
The Birmingham Southern will cease to operate.
Well, Butch Thompson played there, right?
Am I right? Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Wow. Yep. I mean, it's they have a very rich baseball history, and here they are. Yeah, it'd be a tremendous story, almost unbelievable.
That'd be unbelievable. It's like you could write a movie.
A storybook. Absolutely.
They were 13-10 the day the school voted to close. This team was struggling to find themselves. They have gone 19-4 since the vote.
Wow.
I mean, it really is. It's storybook. It really is. Yeah. You know, it's the idea that you've probably given a speech before, Don. Like, there's no tomorrow. Invoking the idea, there's no tomorrow
for
the Birmingham Southern College baseball team. Like, it's smoke them if you got them, and they're taking that all the way to the College World Series. It really is. It's going to be a great documentary and probably a great movie.
Speaking of baseball, I think one of their guys is going to play with them crazy guys in Savannah. Have you
the Bananas?
Have y'all seen them?
Oh yeah.
Something Auburn related?
No, the Birmingham Southern. Those guys. I may be wrong, but I was watching those characters. Wow.
Callie Stanford is she was an Opelika Auburn News intern and a Plainsman. She's doing something this summer. I think she's interning with the Bananas, but she's sharing a lot of Savannah Bananas
maybe
related stuff
on
social media. Yeah. She's doing a great job.
Funny.
All right, you want to get to break we'll go ahead and get to break. We will update you on, speaking of baseball, we'll update you on the
Folks. I mean, Brian's song is on TCM tonight. Everyone should know that. We haven't shared that.
We can get it.
We're worried about if we needed to push the TCM button.
We'll get into that, and we'll catch you up on what has gone on thus far on day one of NCAA Baseball Regionals. Yep. Looked like, it could be a rough start
for
the SEC.
For
but other than Vandy, it's been a pretty good day for the SEC. We'll catch you up on that and more when we come back for our final segment here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the Friday Drive, and we appreciate everybody sticking with us and getting back with us. I mean, again,
Maybe they haven't. No,
because a lot of folks have contacted me personally. That's why, and I appreciate them their concern, and that hopefully
I had a lot.
We'll have a little more available.
I had people reaching out Tuesday and Wednesday wondering, what was going on. So it is.
Weren't even in town.
And I wasn't even in town. So we knew it wasn't my fault.
I thought maybe you'd done it as you left. It's like, I'm not going to, if I'm going to miss time, everybody's going to miss time.
Bill, I told you that in confidence. Appreciate folks hanging through this as we work to get the phone lines back and have the show back fully operational. Really, really appreciate the work that the Auburn Network folks have done too.
Absolutely. Terry Harper and everybody. I mean, Terry is. Everybody who knows anything about radio in at least this part of the state and probably the entire state of Alabama and West Georgia knows who Terry Harper is.
Fix It Felix himself, Riley Hubbard as well. Yep. You know, my man, yeah.
All right. We said we'd run through today, first day of regionals in college baseball. And as we said, didn't look good early on. Vandy was down big early, and they lost big. 13-3 at the Clemson Regional. Coastal Carolina takes out Vandy. Now, remember, this is double elimination, 16 sites, a double elimination, and this will then lead to 8 Super Regionals next week. But other than Vandy, it's been a pretty good day for the Southeastern Conference. The Alabama-UCF game just got started at 5 o'clock. I didn't have a score on it, but, Brian, you're saying UCF's jumped out to the lead.
4-3 UCF early on, yes.
Other games that involving SEC teams, LSU was trailing early. They came back and won
4-3.
Kentucky
held on 10-8 against Western Michigan.
Yeah, Georgia had also been trailing Army. They came back and beat Army 8-7.
And then South Carolina also held on for an 8-7 win over James Madison.
Yeah, some really tight ball games here.
A&M took care of Grambling 8-0. Arkansas 17-9 over
Wow.
Southeast Missouri State.
There's the biggest blowout in Arkansas. Arkansas is a very talented team.
And Florida beat Nebraska in a 3-2 game, 5-2.
Yeah, so the SEC has fared pretty well, except for Vandy today and then Alabama trailing. I believe that's all the SEC teams were playing in the earlier games. So,
Brian, did you –
Tennessee's later tonight. That's a 1-4 right. against Northern Kentucky.
Did we mention on the air the golf celebration? Have we talked about the schedule tonight for – because I know it's
6:30, so yeah, it's time to get over there.
6:30, Toomer's Corner. Auburn will be celebrating the Men's Golf National Championship. First national championship by an Auburn men's team since the football team won the 2010 national championship. You've had multiple equestrian – national championships since then. I think five equestrian national championships since 2010.
Track won outdoor season 1 year, right? I believe so.
I believe that's right. And then you get into swimming and diving from the 2000s. Yep. It's interesting to wonder, what program is best positioned to win their first national championship. Next, women's golf is although some
men's golf got a pretty good shot.
The first ever.
Men's golf and equestrian.
I thought you were saying who's the most likely to win next.
I would say of teams that have won a title before, men's golf and equestrian both look like women's equestrian both look like they're in position of first time champions. Women's golf, men's basketball potentially would be. I mean, the Open is a preseason top 10 team. Maybe men's basketball would be in that mix as well.
Don, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, have a great weekend. Brian, before we go, tell everybody what's coming up.
Tons of recruiting coverage over the next 2 weeks. It's going to be, the wall, so to speak. And it's going to be a pretty wild couple of weeks from recruiting. And everything else going on, in sports. I know it's basically over, but still a few things there. And we'll be covering that really closely.
And they can follow you?
Oh, they can follow me at auburnsports.com. They can follow me on Twitter. That's X and Perez at BMAU.
Eye of the Tiger.
Can we get you back in Monday?
I'll be here.
All right.
Talk about that recruiting weekend.
All right, we'll do that. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.